This happened a few months ago. I'm a 23-year-old female, and I had finally bought a car for myself. I loved driving around and listening to music. I usually liked doing this by myself. On this night, it was around 7 p.m., and it was winter time. On this particular drive, I took two of my siblings. My sister was 18, and my brother was 13. I took them along with me after their constant pleading because they were bored. Now, I'm a smoker, and coming from a South Asian household, women are not supposed to smoke. So I took these opportunities to smoke without worrying that my parents would catch me. The city that I live in has some bad areas. However, we lived in a quiet suburban area. So I didn't give a second thought about parking somewhere, getting out of my car, and lighting up a cigarette. I don't like smoking in my car. So there I was, parked beneath a street light, scrolling away on my phone. It was getting pretty dark, but I wasn't too worried about it, as I would visit this road frequently, and it wasn't too far from my aunt's house. As I was smoking my cigarette, I look up from my phone, and I see a man emerging from some bushes nearby. I didn't think much of it. I see people walking around here all the time. This man was very tall, standing at least 6'4". He was on the opposite sidewalk. I assumed that he was just going to carry on walking, so I looked back to my phone. Until I looked up again and saw him standing in front of my car, staring at me. My sister, who was still in the car, must have been watching him as well, because she knocked on the window, telling me to come in. I had already put out my cigarette and was making my way to the driver's side door, keys in hand. The man was still standing there, not moving a muscle. I got in and locked my door and breathed a sigh of relief, thinking that maybe I was just overreacting. As I put my keys in the ignition, I looked up to see where the guy was, but he was no longer standing in front of my car. I looked in my rearview mirror and saw that he was now standing behind us. He was taking pictures of my license plate. I slightly rolled down my window, and I could see his face a bit clearer now. He appeared to be an Indian man with a beard and a hoodie over his head, obscuring some of the features on his face. I asked him as politely as I could, "Excuse me, what are you doing?" The man comes towards my window, but still kept his distance. He then said in a very aggressive tone, "Do you know who I am?" I didn't know if he was asking a rhetorical question or not. "I have a lot of shit going on in my house. I don't need you parking here and watching me. You look real suspicious. Just randomly parking here with your two friends? What do you think you're doing? Get the fuck out of here." I chuckled nervously. I was trying to keep calm, but my anxiety was already halfway through the roof at this point. I didn't understand how I looked threatening in any way, as I'm a small girl who's been told that she looks like a kid. I was in my pajamas, and I was clearly minding my own business. "Look, I just parked here to smoke. I come here all the time since I live close by." That's when the man got right up to my window. He slid his fingers through the gap and forced my window all the way down, screaming at the top of his lungs, "Get the hell out of here!" I screamed in terror and told him to stop swearing, as I had a minor in the back seat and he was scaring him. He then screamed, "If you don't get out of here right now, I'll damage your fucking car!" My adrenaline was running at full speed, and I was terrified. I didn't even bother putting my seatbelt on. I bolted out of there, and in my panic, I went straight ahead at a junction. It led me to a dead end. As soon as I stopped my car, I took the opportunity to try and calm down. My whole body was shaking. I couldn't even keep my foot on the clutch. My sister was quick to ask me if I was okay, but before I could even answer, I saw a pair of headlights coming right for us. It was the man. He was going at least 50 on a 20, and he almost crashed right into my car, but by some miracle he just missed us. After his car screeched to a stop, he jumped out, and that's when I realized that my window was still all the way down. I quickly tried to roll my window back up, but the man was too quick. He then dove into my car. Half of his body was through my window. I screamed so loudly with his ear right next to my face that I'm sure I deafened him. He was trying to force my car keys from the ignition, but I thanked my lucky stars that with my car, to release the key, you had to have your foot on the clutch, which I didn't. With one hand, I was pressing down on the horn of my car to make as much noise as possible so I could alert anyone who was nearby. I scratched his hands away from my car keys, and I heard my poor siblings crying their eyes out. My little brother had no idea what he could do to protect me, and my sister was in the passenger seat, experiencing all of this firsthand. I finally managed to force the man out of my car, and that's when he started screaming again. "I thought I told you to get out of here. Now I'm going to fucking kill you, bitch!" The deranged man then attempted to pull my door handle, trying to get inside, and that's when I floored it the fuck out of there. I didn't care that my body was shaking like a fish out of water. My main priority was the safety of my siblings. I knew that we were making a loud commotion. I laid down on my horn, trying to get the attention of anyone nearby, but nobody came to help us. I managed to maneuver my way out of the dead end, and then went down a new street, into a totally different area, and I then parked. I knew that this was probably not a good idea, but I didn't see the guy following us. The three of us just sat in my car, sobbing away. This was the first time that anything like this has ever happened to us. I called the police, and I immediately wanted to punch myself in the face when the dispatcher asked if I had gotten the man's registration number. Of course, in my panic, I didn't. I wanted to slap myself in the face, because I listened to a lot of horror stories on YouTube, and I always felt that they taught me how to handle certain situations. The dispatcher was very understanding, as was the female officer who called me the next day. As a woman, she understood how scary it must have been for me, and I cried to her as I recounted the incident. Unfortunately, the cops informed me that there was no CCTV cameras in that area, so there wasn't really much that they could do, especially with me not knowing where he came from. If he did in fact come from one of the nearby houses, I didn't know which one. The officer apologized to me, but it was really my fault for not mentally noting important information. They made a report of my attack, so if a similar incident happens in that area, they can make the connection. The officer said that when I parked my car, the man was likely doing something illegal nearby, and that's why he freaked out on me. I personally think it was just some deranged individual who enjoyed scaring people who looked like easy prey. Growing up in a working-class Latino family, we didn't have the luxury of taking lavish vacations throughout the year. However, that didn't stop us from exploring the natural wonders of Southern California through camping. At a young age, my sister and I understood the value of camping through our shared respect for Mother Nature. Over time, we mastered surviving in the outdoors, so much so that we desired to explore new campgrounds throughout the state. On one such occasion, a coworker of my father overheard him talking about his summer vacation plans and suggested to him a new campground to check out. To this day, my parents nor I are unable to remember the name of the campsite, yet we all agree that it was somewhere in the hills of San Diego County. My father was excited for the prospect of visiting a new national park and packed up the car for the customary family summer retreat. The drive up to the campsite was long and dangerous. Even though we were driving during the day, the steepness of the mountain, coupled with the numerous blind turns, had everyone sitting on the edge of their seats. Argument soon erupted amongst us, as we didn't find any signs indicating where to go. This was in the age before smartphones and GPS. Eventually, we convinced our father to stop and ask for directions. As the campground came into view, we all let out a collective sigh of relief. We made it. And yet, the place did not look like it was a national park at all. There wasn't a ranger station or a welcome center anywhere in sight. The lake appeared murky like a bog, whereas the campground itself was devoid of life. A proverbial ghost town, with the only inhabitants being us. With our bewilderment aside, we cautiously surveyed the area, finding any clues that will guide us to the keeper of this place. Out in the distance, we saw a crumbling, open sign dangling in the window of a dilapidated diner. Just as the sign implied, we entered the establishment to inquire about the place. Pushing the creaking door open, we were greeted by the owner of the diner, a gaunt-looking man who I would now say was plucked straight out of the movie The Hills Have Eyes.
"Well, how can I help y'all folks on this fine day?"
My dad replied. "We made reservations to camp here, but I'm not sure if this is the right place." We then handed the man our booking papers for him to inspect. With his bony fingers grasping the pages, he replied,
Yeah, you have the right place. I'm the groundskeeper of this here national park. Let me finish some paperwork on my end, and I'll get things ready for you and your family to stay here with us."
As he wobbled off to the back of the diner, my sister and I retreated to the safety of our car. Although we were children at the time, we both felt a sense of unease, even dread, at the thought of spending the night here. Despite our worries, our parents reassured us that the vacation had only just begun, albeit with a few bumps along the way. As we neared the site, all of our concerns were tossed out the window, as it was time to transform this empty lot into our secure encampment. The rest of the day came and went as our campsite was beginning to take shape. The sounds of our radio, along with the rhythmic banging of the hammer, were the only echoes greeting us as the sun began to set. This detail stood out to me, due to the fact it was early July here in Southern California, and there are always people camping around this time. In either case, we all just brushed it aside and thought that more people would arrive by tomorrow. And they did. On the following day of the trip, my father went fishing at the lake. While he was off on his own adventure, my sister and I decided that it was time to have one of our own. Recruiting the aid of our mother, we set out to explore the campgrounds. To our surprise and elation, we discovered that this campground had its own public swimming pool. With our minds made up, the three of us got into our bathing suits, slathered on the sunscreen, and made our way to the pool. Soon my sister and I were splashing around in the water, without a care in the world, until I noticed three suspicious men, dressed entirely in black. They came and sat at one of the chairs at the opposite end of the pool from where our mother was watching us. At first, I thought the men were new campers that had recently arrived at the grounds to examine the swimming pool, but to my dismay, the men just huddled around each other and whispered incomprehensible things while staring intently at the two of us. My mother's instincts caught on to the predatory behavior, and she decided to cut our excursion to the swimming pool short. When my father arrived from the lake, he said he was unable to catch any fish, and that the fish he did find were all belly up dead in the water. My mother then informed my father of the three suspicious-looking men eyeing my sister and I at the pool. This infuriated him. My father, brandishing his machete, stormed out in search of the group of men, ostensibly to talk some sense into them. Some time passed, and my father arrived back at the campsite, dismayed that he did not find the men, only a mother and her two little boys. This point may sound insignificant at first, but it will become important later in the story. As night fell, my sister and I were preparing to go to sleep, when we were suddenly jolted awake by the pleading screams of a woman. Her pleas were joined by the cries of two young children and various male voices demanding their silence. My father recognized the woman's voice as the mother he saw earlier in the day camping alone with her two kids. My father, who is a former Marine, loaded his rifle and concealed his hunting knife. He then proceeded to tell my mother to take care of us while handing her a loaded gun. I then saw my father head out towards the campsite where the single mother and her children were staying. My sister and I were petrified when we noticed the terror-stricken look on our mother's face. As the yelling escalated, two thunderous bangs from the rifle rang out. which put an end to the chaos. Seconds later, we heard the crackling branches closing in as someone moved quickly towards us. My mother, with eyes wide and knuckles clenched, aimed into the darkness, ready to protect us at all costs. To our relief, my father emerged from the shadows with a fearful mother and her two sobbing children. My father then claimed that he scared off the men who were harassing us at the pool and will be helping the mother pack her things to leave. To ensure that they made their way down the mountain safely, my father offered to follow her in our car until she got to the main highway. In a moment of reprieve, the woman held her children tight. We all assured her that their safety was of the utmost importance, and knowing my father, any form of aggression needs to be handled quickly. With pleasantries aside, my father departed yet again to help the mother pack up her campsite and leave this backwater excuse for a national park. The few rays of sunlight that streamed into our tent signaled the start of a new day, since our father had left to escort the small family from the imminent danger. With a look of apprehension on my mother's face, my sister and I started to pack up camp, knowing all too well that we did not want to risk our lives spending another night at this place. I was making my way to the bathrooms when my eye caught the glimpse of our car slowly making its way back to camp. I ran back to tell my mother and sister, who noticed the car as well, and soon the bloodshot eyes of my father behind the wheel came into view. As he exited the car, he informed us that the mother and her children made it safely to the highway. This was then followed by a long pause, with my father saying, "Now let's get the hell out of here ourselves." With that, we all took our positions and packed up the rest of our camping gear. Before leaving this godforsaken place, my father informed the owner of the diner about what happened last night and about the three suspicious-looking men. The only thing that the emaciated-looking man said was,
"Well, it's a damn shame that you and your family can't stay here a little longer."
We then hightailed it out of there like bats out of hell, vowing never to return. Ever since this harrowing experience, my family and I have been unable to get my sister to go camping again. As time went on, I decided to ask my father where he had heard about that awful place, to which he added a new detail not previously disclosed. He mentioned that upon returning to work, he wanted to confront his coworker about the horrible camping recommendation he gave. When he tried to locate him, another coworker stated that the same man quit a couple of days before my father was going to return from vacation. My father was left speechless and confused upon hearing this. Was the man somehow connected to those three men? If so, what were their motives for harassing a family out in the middle of nowhere? The answers to these questions we will never know, but what I do know is this. If my father did not intervene on that fateful night, that single mother and her kids would have met a fate far worse than a failed camping trip. I am an immigrant from Belarus. English is not my first language, so I apologize if I phrase things differently. Here's some backstory. I was only 11 when my family left the country after the collapse of the Soviet Union. My father was involved with the Communist Party and would frequently visit Moscow when I was a boy. I don't know all the details. I don't even know what exactly my father's role was in the USSR, but from what I understand, we were granted asylum in the United States and had to flee Belarus in 1991. But that's not really why I'm writing this story. This is about something I saw in my childhood that has scarred me for life. This took place roughly a year before we left, so I'm guessing the year was 1990. My family, like many others, lived in a massive apartment building in Minsk. There were two other identical apartment buildings adjacent to ours, and directly behind the buildings was a playground area where I would play with my friends Sasha and Victor. Beyond the playground was a section of trees that separated a shopping plaza from the apartment grounds. I remember that my mother was feeling ill and was bedridden, and my father was away on business in Moscow, so I was pretty much on my own that night. I remember that I had gotten bored watching TV in the living room and decided to go outside and see if any of my friends were at the playground. I would say this was around 8 p.m. and it was dark out. By then, most of the children were inside, and I don't even think anyone was allowed on the playground at that time, but I didn't care. There was no one around to tell me to go back inside, and I was pretty excited to have the playground all to myself. It was chilly out that night, but it was not snowing, so I figured that I would play on the slides and swing set until I either got bored or if security came along and told me to go back inside. So there I was, just swinging in the dark, when I heard something near the fence that separated the trees from the playground. It was a strange noise, like someone was sawing wood, but there was something just off about it. I ignored the sound, but it became louder as time passed, to the point where I became curious as to what was causing this strange noise. There were no lights at the playground itself, but there were lights mounted to the back of the apartment buildings that illuminated things just enough to where you could see your surroundings. But the trees beyond the fence were pitch black. I got off the swing set and approached the edge of the playground. The sound continued getting louder, even as I got up right to the fence. It wasn't until I let out a curious, "Hello?" that the noise ceased. I stood there staring into the dark trees, waiting for a response, but all remained silent. After about another minute passed, I innocently asked, "Why are you chopping down trees in the dark?" I then heard a shuffling from within the trees, and soon, I saw a dark figure come into view, but did not step out from the tree line. What happened next is something that still makes me want to vomit out my insides. The dark figure then threw something. The object flew over the fence and hit me directly in the chest. I was knocked backwards, more out of surprise than the actual force of the impact.
"Hey, why'd you do that?"
I shouted. But before I could get another word out, I caught a glimpse of what had been thrown at me. A severed human arm was lying on the ground in front of me. I screamed at the top of my lungs and ran back towards the apartments, bawling my eyes out. I stormed into our apartment and sat on the living room couch to collect myself. I did think about waking my sick mother and telling her about what happened, but decided against it. To give you some perspective, my mother grew up in Siberia and she could be quite ruthless at times. Not only would she not be too happy about being woken up, but she most likely wouldn't believe my story. And I probably wouldn't be able to sit down for a week if she found out I left the apartment alone after dark. So I kept this incident to myself. As a child, I understood that what happened was scary, but I had no grasp of the implications. I thought there was a monster in the woods who ate people who came out after dark. Now that I'm an adult, there are some things that I've come to realize. For our remaining time in Belarus, I never saw or heard any kind of investigation regarding a missing person or a mutilated body being discovered, which is nothing out of the ordinary living in Soviet society. The monster in the woods, hiding in the trees that night, was most likely a sadistic madman dismembering a human body with a hacksaw. There is one more thing that I should mention. For the rest of the time that we lived there, I cannot for the life of me recall ever seeing my friend Sasha again after that night.